Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Keep yourself safe this winter season. Wear layers to protect yourself from winter's cold. Also keep a hat, scarf, and mittens on hand as essential winter gear. Select footwear appropriate for snow and slush, and be sure to keep extra dry clothing in your vehicle in case you get wet. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends on Skype. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
As we enter this month of Thanksgiving, Sportsman's Warehouse would like to say thanks to you. We love being your local outfitter and sharing in your success stories and outdoor adventures. Check us out on the web at sportsmanswarehouse.com or come visit us. Sportsman's Warehouse, the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Graven now joins us with Holtz Brook. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us around the campfire.
It's great to join you, Brian, and your listeners. And I'm happy to be here to speak about some axes today.
We are honored to have you on the program. We wanted to time this interview. We actually crossed paths for the Outdoor Retailer this past summer. We're very excited to have you with us. We timed this specifically because it's Christmas tree permit season, and it's time to cut down those Christmas trees. And it's also that perfect gift idea for the holiday season. It can become an heirloom for your family. It can become one of those important things for your family. When anything unexpected can happen, it's nice to have something that you can count on that's dependable from a company that's been around for more than 300 years.
Definitely, there's a lot of history to the company Holtz Brook, made in Sweden since 1697, as well as the axe. In its history with humanity, I look at the axe, it's almost like looking up at the stars at night. It's something that almost every human has done, hopefully. Maybe not so much with axes anymore, but yeah, it connects us back to the past. It's one of the simplest tools mankind has had. It's one of the most useful. I think what's really interesting with the most recent launch of Holtz Brook's Agdor line, it's rather an introduction of an old line based on 19th century American felling axes. And so there was a lot of history between the development of what you could consider a modern axe and the development of North America as a country, America, and as well as the pioneering movement. And so it's a tool that you can take, you can personalize, you can use, and then pass along to someone else with some care. And I think that's what really sets these axes apart is you start with high-quality materials and craftsmanship, and then something that you want to keep around. And there are a lot of different options out there, a lot of cheaper axes on the market that you can find with different materials and craftsmanship. Ours are hand-forged using a really high carbon quality steel that's sourced in Sweden. And we've been Just Axes since 1880. So the brand and the company has been around since before America, but it was really around the time of the golden era of axes is when Holtz Brook specialized in just really American-styled axes. So you had early American axes were very different than the axes that were brought over by the Europeans, and the fact that they didn't have a pole, which is the back slab of metal on the axe that actually acts as a counterbalance and it drives force. And so they added that piece in probably about the 1700s in North America. It's not exactly known when and where, but they just know around that time, this new axe started showing up. And that's the last development in axes, a tool that's been around for probably 2 million years.
Digging back a little deeper into the further history of Holtz Brook, this company is in Sweden. They're using basically the same facilities they did over 300 years ago. And earlier, I understand they used water to power a lot of their equipment. They've modernized a little bit today, but what a neat history. And they're well known around the world.
Yeah, there's something about the Scandinavian culture. If you want to go back in Viking era, they had these boats and these ships, and they were able to go out and trade all around the world. One of the interesting things I found was they had crucible steel, which is a very special style of steel, high carbon content, and they had it 800 years before anyone else in Europe. And so they were using these boats not only to cross the ocean, but they can go up rivers. And so they were trading and gathering knowledge and techniques and even steel from different countries. They believe that steel came from somewhere in Iran. And then they brought it back up and forged it in Scandinavia. And so they have a really long mythological history with steel and steel tools. And so a really interesting piece of history about Holtzbrook is where it's located is next to a lake, which was used to power, like you said, the early trip hammers that they were using to make items like nails were some of the first items they were making. And these were used to export. But when they were digging up foundations on that location in the late 1800s, they were digging up a foundation for a school building and I think some worker housing. And they uncovered a site with hundreds of Stone Age axes. So all the way back to prehistoric times, and there was such a quantity of them being made in those sites that they thought it was an axe manufacturing facility. There was a certain type of stone on site there that was really good for making Stone Age axes. And yes, they threw them back, apparently, back in the ground, took some of them out. I haven't been able to dig up too much research about that, but I thought it was an interesting piece of lore about Holtzbrook and that area as far as the axe creating. There's been axes made on that site there in Sweden going back prehistory times. More recently, like you had mentioned, the site was chosen because of its access to water and wood. I don't know if any of your listeners have had a chance to go out to Sweden. It's just really densely forested. It's not so mountainous like Utah and Colorado, maybe a little more in the north, but most of it's just big lakes and a lot of forest. And so they had the resources to be able to create a factory there. And you got to think, 1697 is before the Industrial Revolution really took off. So really forward-thinking. Everything was under a royal permit system at the time. So they were first issued the permit to forge metal in 1697. And then the forge was passed on to a few different people, and it finally landed on the Elklunds. And this family held on to it for three generations. And it was Magnus Elklund who, in the late 1800s, took ownership. He was born and raised there at Holtzbrook at the factory site, and so he'd grown up around that his whole life. And he came over to America to study axe production. And at the time, in the 1880s, axes were huge in the U.S. You have to remember, before the chainsaw was popular, which really didn't take off until after World War II, surprisingly, everything was cut by hand. And so all the pioneers who came out west, they were cutting logs, hewing them, splitting them for their houses. It was all done by hand. And so you had this really lifeline with the axe and creating your life out here in the New World and in the West. And so industrialization and the railroads came along. And I think this was a really interesting piece of history was the tiehacks. They were basic lumberjacks in Wyoming, up in the Uinta and Wasatch Mountains, who were cutting all these railroad ties for the Union Pacific Railroad, which, as you know, comes through Utah. And they were cutting them just by the piece. So you'd get paid like 20, 30 cents a railroad tie. And these guys were out there cutting 10, 20, 30 railroad ties a day by hand. So they'd actually fell the tree and then use a different axe to come across and hew it, which is just rough shaping. And then they'd have it hauled out and they'd get paid by the piece. And so that was really the golden era of axes in the Americas, was between the Civil War and about the 1960s. It's what our axes are still based on, the production methods that Gunnar Elklund came over from Sweden to learn in the Americas. And I apologize, I don't know which axe manufacturers he went to learn from. There were several. If you look back in axe history, there was hundreds of axe makers when that was the tool to tackle the wilderness with. And so as things have progressed and modernized, you have less and less axe makers still making them in the traditional way, whereas Holtzbrook is one of the few in the world that keeps this tradition of hand forging or open die forging alive.
What I love about these axes is their history. These are handcrafted. And it's not like other factory, which will produce thousands.
they'll take a look at one out of 1,000, and if it's okay, then they let the lot go. This here, every one, every single one goes through many hands, and there's a process, and if it doesn't meet their specs, if it doesn't meet their quality, it doesn't get out on the market. And every one is custom built. It's just like a fingerprint. Last year, we talked a bit about pattern welded blades. Everyone's like a fingerprint, and these have that similar characteristic to it. They're handcrafted. Everyone is hand sharpened. They're not done by any monster machine or anything. They are done to a specific specification there before they get out. When you see them on the shelves, I just sit there for minutes going, okay, which one do I want?
There is definitely an aesthetic appeal to them, Brian, as well as being useful. There's something to be said about the quality materials and craftsmanship. You can go out there, and for a lot of your readers who are more survival-minded, fiberglass or plastic handle isn't going to last forever. Whereas with these axes, it is more of a traditional specialized instrument. It is a wooden handle, the axe. So that's the one piece of it that won't last forever. The natural materials and the craftsmanship are there. And if you do break a wooden handled axe and you're in a situation where you just have the axe head, you can carve a new axe handle and put it on. But if you have a fiberglass or a plastic handle, you break the handle, it's done. You're out of it. So these are really manufactured for a lifetime of use that goes beyond just one individual. As long as you take care of it, they'll take care of you. And I think that was an interesting piece. But yeah, the forging process is something that they've been using since the 1800s. It's changed a little bit over the years. They used to make it out of two pieces of steel. It was a dense iron that was then had a softer bit or edge welded into it. And then when they changed to a single piece of steel, they kept the open die forging, which basically you're taking a billet of steel that's sourced in Sweden. It's high carbon, high quality steel, designed just for Holzbrook axe steel. I think it's called HB3 is the name of the steel. And they take it and they heat it up in these ovens, the glowing red. And then it's by hand and tongs. You remove the billet and put it into this large mechanical drop hammer. And the open dies come down and press it into a mold to give it the shape. And it's actually really skilled. When you say it's hand forged, what we're really talking about is free formed or open die forging. Some people take that to mean the guy with a hammer and an anvil, and people can still make an axe like that, but it's very inferior as far as the amount of pressure that it takes to change the steel. When you're doing it by hand, you're not getting as much as you are from a machine. So most axes since the 1800s have been created with mechanical advantage, some kind of trip hammer to create that additional pressure. So when we say it's hand forged, it really means that it's open die forged. It does take considerable skill. There's a video online you can see of our forging, and the machine is moving at such a rapid rate, and you have to be in time with it. So I was actually lucky enough to go to Sweden and visit the factory and attempt to forge my own axe.
Really?
Yeah, and it's skillful. The steel's hot. You've got to move quick. If you put it in the wrong place, you can stamp it out into the form of a penny pretty quick. So it's skillful work. It definitely takes some training. And like you said, each one's made by hand. And so it's hand forged. The steel is moved through the presses. It gives it its rough shape. And then after that, it's ground by hand for all the premium axes. And then for the standard series, they're a little less hand finished, but it's that same high quality steel and premium American hickory handles.
I love the fact that you went with American hickory with these handles. It is such a traditional quality wood. They'll last if you take good care of it.
It's really the standard for most axes these days. A long time ago, it's funny, if you go onto the Holzbrook website, you can see our old catalogs going all the way back to the late 1800s, where they were shipping axes without handles. It just made more sense. Why would you ship wood overseas when they could just source their own handle? So a lot of times you see them with the instructions on how to ship via telegram and how to order them without handles or with handles. But yeah, the American hickory has been kind of the standard now for axe making. So we are sourcing the hickory here, shaping it in Sweden, and then it's assembled in Sweden as well. But the hickory handles are great. You're able to customize them. So with the hatchet that I have, taken some sandpaper to it and sanded down the handle where I've felt any hot spots and made it shape to my hand. And then we just oil it back up with some boiled linseed oil and protect it, and it keeps lasting. Some people like to protect the wood with a collar or an axe protector. Really, it's more of a technique. That's part of using an axe, is beating it up a little bit, break a handle, rehaft an axe, and then do it again. And so, yeah, it's kind of a fun project. If any of your listeners are interested, get an axe, go out and break it and rehandle it, and you learn a lot. You learn a lot about woodwork and axes as well.
And that's where it becomes part of that family legacy. If you bring it out every year for the Christmas tree hunting, if you have a cabin up in the woods somewhere and that's your source of heat for the wintertime, this is something that can be handed down from generation to generation. And if properly taken care of, it's amazing how long these things can last. I've looked at the archives, and some of these things you can find if you hunt carefully. They may have some rust on them, but if you take care of them, you can rehabilitate those things and bring them back to life again. They're quality. They'll last.
It's excellent, and that's part of the lore and history of axes. Is we get people every week who found this in a tool shed. I found this under some dirt in a barn, and I put a new handle on it. What do you think? And how old is it? And it's not uncommon to see a 100-year-old axe put back to use, even if it has been left untreated. And it kind of develops character, and that's something you don't see all the time in modern hand tools. Is as you shape it and as you work with it, the handle might take on a new character. As you use the axe head, it patinas. And so how you treat and care for your axe can change the color and the shape. It's a piece of material just like a knife. There's a million ways to sharpen or take care of an axe. And so I wouldn't suggest that there's any one right way, but there's definitely a personalized way to do it. And as you use your axe and get to know it and shape it for what you use it for, it becomes an extension of yourself and it has a bunch of character. And so we see that as well. People send in axes. I found it in my father's goods after we passed away. And can you tell me more about it? That's just really interesting to see the history of some of these products as they travel along. And there are traditions. As I mentioned, I was lucky enough to go to Sweden, visit the factory. I have the axe that I forged. They were kind enough to shape it and grind it into something useful for me. And I use it every Christmas. We go out with my 5-year-old daughter and hunt our Christmas tree on National Forest. The permits are out there. You just go to the, I don't know where, in Utah and Colorado, is just at the hardware store. I think it's like a $10 or $15 permit for National Forest. Then select a tree and you cut it down and bring it home. And that same axe that I used to cut my Christmas trees, I used to kindle my fireplace here all through the winter. And I use it for camping in the spring. And eventually I'll teach my daughter how to use it when I feel like it's the time. And hopefully I don't lose it and I take care of it. And it's something that I can give to her later on.
Great story. That's what I love about it. Now, if folks are lucky enough to find one online or find one in the classifieds or at a garage sale or something, if I remember correctly, I thought I saw a tool somewhere where you can find identifying marks and might be able to dig up some history on that specific axe head.
Yes, Brian, if you go on the Holtzbrook website, there is a section at the top for vintage axes. Your listeners can go on there and look at old catalogs. Those catalogs outline the production of Holtzbrook's Swedish axes from the 1880s all the way up to the 1960s and 50s. And so you can really see that golden era of axes. And so, yeah, people who have a Holtzbrook axe that are interested in dating and identifying it, sometimes we're able to do that. It can be a little bit tricky depending on the axe and the age and the wear and just photos. But with the resources we have, we're usually able to put 20 or 30-year production date range on some of these axes. And, yeah, you can go online and look at all the different axes that were made throughout the years. Some of them on there are 130 years old. And it's the same axes that we're making today. So one of the major axes that we make, it's the most popular in the Agdor line. It's called the Yankee pattern. And it's modeled after North American patterns, even though it's made by a Swedish brand. They took those early North American axe patterns that were so popular for the forestry, and they exported them. They took them to Sweden, created them there, and then they started exporting them all over the world. And so you find these axes Holtzbrook's axes in Australia and in South America and in Europe. And so it's not uncommon to see a 100-year-old axe from someone in Australia or Canada. So it was a worldwide product early on. And I think that's what was really interesting about it is they didn't just start this trying to make axes for Sweden. They were making it for export worldwide. And they were making American-style axes like the Yankee. And so that pattern's actually been around for about 130 years in production.
My goodness.
Mostly unchanged. Some slight variations, but yeah, that same axe pattern. They've tried different things in the past, and they keep coming back to what works.
I like that a lot. All right, then, let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with James Graven with Holtzbrook. We'll talk more about the Agdor line of axes. Stick around. More fun is on the way here on Western Life Radio. Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends on Skype. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE. Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure, explore Utah, and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Utah State Parks has a series of 17 snowmobiling complex maps available. These maps have a description of the trail, difficulty rating, mileage, and GPS coordinates. For your copy, download them from www.snowut.com. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. And if this winter that includes ice fishing, you're in luck. Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment. When it's cold outside, that's the time to come in and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, Utah born, Utah proud, serving you since 1986, Sportsman's Warehouse, the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors.
Be safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
No matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host of this program. We have Mr. James Graven with us with Holtzbrook. And jumping back to the Agdor line, you actually got the Yankee felling axes, but you also have the Montreal felling axes. What are the differences between these two?
And so there's kind of an interesting thing that happened when the American axe was being developed. They came up with regional patterns. And these are fun to look at and look up, and there's a bunch of different resources on our website. You can look at a few different patterns in the catalogs and then on a poster as well. But each region had its own specific pattern developed around how they were using it for the hardwoods in that region. So you have an Ohio pattern, the Maine pattern, the Rockaway, Jersey. It just goes on and on. Unfortunately, all those patterns fell away as people started using chainsaws and axes fell out of production as much. It's costly to keep up that many different models. And so you saw the consolidation of that into the limited axe pattern that you see today. When you go into a hardware store, it's mostly an Ohio or a Dayton pattern. And that's similar to what the Yankee pattern is. The Montreal that you were talking about has a much longer, wider bit. And so it's shaped a little bit differently. And there's a few different patterns. I think there's about 11 patterns currently in production at Holtzbrook. And each pattern is made with a different use in mind. And so for the Montreal, it's got a really long blade, and it's not quite as blocky as the Yankee. And interestingly enough, people are using that for throwing because it has such a long blade. So we've seen axe throwing really come up in popularity in the last few years. And that axe is really popular with axe throwers because it has a long cutting edge, and they're just a little bit different shapes. So if you look at the premium axe line, you'll find axes that are more designed for crafting tasks. So we have carpenter's axes, stuff where making a straight cut or forward push cuts are more what you're looking for, and you're not really trying to fell a tree. So depending on the use of the axe, it depends on which pattern you might look for. The Montreal, the Yankee, and the Agdor line are both really good felling axes. One might be a little bit better of a splitter. The Yankee's a little wider. So depending on what you're looking for and how you're going to use it, that determines which axe you select.
I know a lot of people probably glaze over and they go, wow, you know, I was just looking for an axe and I didn't realize there was this many options. Size makes a big difference. If you get too big of an axe, it's a little unwieldy if you're cutting kindling, for example. But if you're felling a tree, a little more power behind, a little more length makes all the difference in the world there.
Absolutely. And depending on where you're going to use it, around the house or the campfire makes a big difference. If I'm carrying the axe, I'm probably go with a smaller sized axe. Whereas if I'm carrying what's called the truck axe, I'm probably going to have the biggest thing I can carry. So that's usually what I recommend is get the biggest axe for your needs that you can, and then size down if you have to travel or if you need something a little more portable. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Having a large axe to use for kindling just doesn't make any sense. And at the same time, going out with a hatchet and trying to cut down a big tree is going to take you all day.
Can't have just one, can you?
It does become an obsession. We make these really large, massive belly harnesses that are a 3-pound head with a 32-inch handle. And those are great if you're going to go out and sell the traditional way. Unlike a chainsaw, it has no moving parts. It doesn't take any gasoline in a pinch. And that's always going to work. And so I think that's the real appeal of having an axe at hand. Then there's just specific uses. I've yet to see someone split a cord of firewood with a chainsaw. So you're definitely going to want to have a splitting axe or a maul for a task like that. And then for kindling, having a hatchet is great. But I also feel like it can be one of the most dangerous tools out there, having a hatchet at the camp, watching someone pick it up and start swinging it around can absolutely just be terrifying. But learning how to use the tool properly for the job that it was intended. These axes aren't made for sledgehammer-type use. They're not going to go out and use them to break rocks open or anything like that. They're not designed to be used as hammers. They're axes. But there's just some simple stuff you can do when using them that keeps you safe. One of the easiest tips I have for your listeners is when you're splitting with an axe, when you're making kindling, one of the most dangerous ways to do it is to put your fingers out there and hold the piece that you're splitting. You're going to put your finger or your hand right in harm's way. Just use a stick. I call it the helper stick. You can just take a small piece of kindling and hold whatever log you're about to split with, and that keeps your fingers safely out of the way. But yeah, it's a great tool to have on hand, depending on the task. You just got to know how to use it, right?
I'm glad you brought those up, because there are some misuses of these tools, and if you misuse them, you can harm yourself or others very quickly.
Absolutely. We see all of the heads for our axes using a hydraulic press. There's a wooden wedge and a steel wedge inserted into the axe head. So our axes are very secure as far as down to the handles. But that's the first thing when you're inspecting an axe, to make sure that the heads properly fit to the handle before you go swinging it. And then you're absolutely right, there's some ways to abuse an axe. The pole, you know, as we discussed, the back end of the axe that looks like a hammer. It's a large chunk of metal. We were discussing that earlier, that was actually a North American creation to put that chunk of metal at the back of the axe to act as a counterbalance and to drive more force on these axes. So it's very useful for that. But the first thing someone's used for, unfortunately, is a hammer, and it's not tempered. When you're tempering an axe, it has to be strong enough that it can cut and not break. If you temper it too much, it's brittle. So it has to have a little bit of give. And so the back of the axe is actually everything connected around the handle is not tempered. And so if you use it to strike something harder than itself with, it'll break, deform, and contract the steel and lead to all sorts of problems. So we never recommend that you use the back of the pole of the axe to hit things other than wood. And that's another great misconception, is you can hit stuff with the pole of the axe, just not metal and not rock, right? Nothing that's stronger than the metal itself. And so it's okay to use the back of the axe to hit wood with. I do it all the time. A great way to split if your axe gets stuck is to take a wooden mallet and to hit the back of the axe with it and drive it through. And that's perfectly acceptable. So there's certain ways you can use the axe that are okay. And then, like I was saying, using the back of the axe as a hammer to pound on metal is a really good way to break it. Unless it's been tempered for that. And Holtzbrook's axes aren't tempered for that. And the reason being is that we want durability in the axe. And so if we were to make the axe tempered and brittle all the way around the axe eye, it'd be more prone to breaking.
Wouldn't be as flexible to handle the blows.
Exactly, that it wouldn't be as durable to last a lifetime. There's other axes out there that temper the back of the axe head, and that's how they do it. For us, we're looking for longevity.
And I'm also glad you shared those safety tips, too, because I just saw a television show the other day. It was a survival show, and somebody cut their hand with the axe, not paying attention. It's real easily done. These things are razor sharp.
Absolutely. The premium axes that come out from Holtzbrook, there's a lot of time spent hand sharpening them, and they're hair splitting sharp when they come out of the box. And you want to keep it like that. A sharp axe is a safe axe. It's less likely to bounce. you want it to cut and to do what it's supposed to do. But yeah, there's something just terrifying when someone who's new to an axe picks up your razor sharp axe and starts swinging it around. So it's not something I often give out with other people when I'm camping. I keep it to myself. It really takes some time to put an edge on an axe, and it doesn't take much time to take it off, if you know what I mean.
I do. And let's talk about that, too. I love the videos you have on your website, Axe School, how to maintain them, how to care for them, and if you need to make modifications, it tells you how to modify.
Yeah. I think, again, that's the appeal of having something that's handcrafted using natural materials. You can modify it really easily and put your own mark on it, whether it's something for aesthetics, so if it's something that's a little more utilitarian. There's a lot of different ways to take care of an axe. A million different ways to sharpen an axe, just like a knife, but it's pretty easy to do with these axes because it has high-quality Swedish steel that's been expertly tempered. And so holds an edge really well. It's easy to sharpen. So we keep them at a pretty flat grind for the carpentry-style axes and about 11 degrees to the felling axes. And we don't recommend that you change the bevels that much. We do have a line that's made to be customized. It's called the Arvika. It's 4.5 pounds. It's a massive, massive axe. That's actually recommended that you can take a grind to it and change the angles and really make it your own. For the rest of our axes, it's better if you stick with the bevels that we've set at the factory. You can do all sorts of other modifications to them. You can shape the handle. I think is one of the most important pieces is as you use something for hours, you start to notice that there's a hot spot here. We can't shape every handle perfectly for everyone's hand. So I recommend getting some sandpaper or even a wood file if you need to, and reshaping the handle near the grip just a little bit so that it's customized. And then you can change the colors of the handle. You can stain them, you can protect them. Most people just use boiled linseed oil. You can use waxes. Some people scorch them so you can burn the wood so it has a really darkened look. The other nice thing, you mentioned holiday gifts. Because it's natural materials, you can have them laser engraved. And as long as you're not cutting really deep, it doesn't affect the performance of the handle. So you can easily, somewhere locally, pick up an axe, take it into a laser engraver, have someone's name or initials put on it, or any message, really. On my axe, I was fortunate enough to have my initials stamped into the steel, which is another option. You can get some stamps with your initials and personalize it a little bit like that. Yes, they do last a really long time if you take care of them. As far as the steel on the axe head goes, protecting it with a little bit of oil, making sure they just clean them up every now and then. And yeah, so you take care of these tools, and they take care of you, and then can be used for generations past them.
I am so excited. Again, there's 6 or 7 different tools in the Agdor line.
There's 7 axes. There'll be an 8. There's going to be another Montreal added to the line probably in 2 or 3 months. But yeah, there's an Agdor line. There's 7 axes. It has most of them are the Yankee pattern, which is a blockier style, good all around. Like I had mentioned, it's been in production for 130 years at Holtzbrook. So it's really good for felling, bucking, splitting. And then there's the Montreal pattern, which is on a 28-inch handle right now. And that one is popular with axe throwers that fit in league requirements for axe throwing. But it's also at a really good size for what's known as kind of a mid-size or a boy-sized axe. So it's not overly massive that you wouldn't want to put it in the back of your truck or under a car seat. It'll still have a lot of cutting power. And then there's another specialty axe in the Agdor line that's kind of interesting. It's a Swedish splitting pattern axe. It's a really narrow wedge-like shape. And so it fits in between a maul, or a really large sledgehammer axe, and a smaller hatchet. So it's just designed for splitting small rounds around the house, around the campfire. So that one's interesting. And then there's a hatchet in that line. And then the other line of axes that Holtzbrook has is the premium series. And those are more of a high-end finished product. Above Agdor, those axes in that line can be brought up to the level of a premium axe. because it is that same high-quality Swedish steel. It's been forged the same way, treated the same way. It's just less hand finish, so it's painted blue, and the handles don't have the Holtzbrook logo. So that's a little bit of a less refined axe, a little more of a working axe in the Agdor line. But if you wanted to take one of those and spend a little bit of time with a file, you could bring those up to a razor sharp edge, and you can sand out and finish the handle and make it really nice premium axe at a good value. And so you're starting out with that high quality materials to begin with on either one of the axe lines. It's just how much of a finished product you're looking for. And so the premium axes, they don't have blue paint. It comes with a nice black and forged finish that patinas really well, and they're really sharp. So several additional hours are spent sharpening these by hand. And so when they come out, they're mirrored. I mean, you almost want to just hang them on a wall.
I believe
but it is made to be used. It's a beautiful gift. You get it, you're just in awe. Just beautiful form. Most of the premium series feature what's called a turpentine pattern. And so that's a different axe shape. It's more for crafting and carving. It can be used for felling. It does hard work. But if you look at the shape, it has a notch under the beard so you can choke up and make precision-controlled cuts. And so if you're someone who's really outdoorsy, who's doing bushcraft, wants to build filters, or maybe just wants to do some projects around the campfire, like carve a spoon or try your hand at carving a bowl, these axes are going to give you a little more precision. They're more refined out of the box, so they're really sharp, ready to go. But also the style of pattern on these axes is more developed for specific uses. And so we have one that's called the Aka Forester's Axe, and it has a carpenter-style axe head. So it's really flat edge made for push cuts, but it's been added to a longer handle, so it gives you really good leverage. So it has some of that chopping power as well. And so some of those axes are a little more popular for your outdoors people, whereas the Agdor line is more of a high-end axe that you can use for really rough work, and it'll last a long time.
I know there's a tool on your website where people can find their nearest retailer as well as purchase things online.
Yeah, so you can find all of that information on where to find a retailer on the Holtzbrook website. It's holtzbrook1697.se. And then there's a button up there on where to buy, and you can find a map of retailers. We do have several in Utah, from the REI, downtown, Salt Lake. Blade HQ is another really good resource there. I think they're mostly online, but they're based there in Utah, so shipping should be really, really fast. And I believe they have the full range of Agdor axes as well.
Again, website one more time. How do they find you?
It's Holtzbrook, Holtzbrook, 1697.se.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure, explore Utah, and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Utah State Parks has a series of 17 snowmobiling complex maps available. These maps have a description of the trail, difficulty rating, mileage, and GPS coordinates. For your copy, download them from www.snowut.com. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Be
safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
High country brook trout are showing their finest colors, and now's a great time to take home a few. We're hiking a few alpine lakes next on Western Life Radio. Sportsman's Warehouse started right here in Utah, and as you probably already know, it's your headquarters for everything hunting. With the season in full swing, Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need to gear up for the hunts. But if hunting's not your thing, you've got to see the selection of great camping supplies, from tents, sleeping bags, packs, and lanterns, to thousands of accessories. And with football season, let's not forget tailgating. Let's talk grills, pop-up shelters, tables, and chairs galore. There's something for everyone. Sportsman's Warehouse. Utah born, Utah proud. Hike to a pristine alpine lake to thin out a few brook trout. David Richards with Sportsman's Warehouse meets us at the trailhead.
For some of the winners on the brookies, I would probably use small streamers, maybe in a size 10 or 12. Just those elevations, they're not used to seeing stuff much bigger than that. You can still do well with nymphs. Kind of the same stuff we'd use down at these lower elevations, just on a smaller scale. Your blacks and olives, those are probably your two go-to colors. Whites might work, reds, a black and red, or an olive and red, those can always be good producing colors. Maybe leave some of the bigger ones in there as the breeding stock, some of those in the middle range, then those out of there, and let the bigger ones get bigger. They should be pretty tasty right now. You just got to be careful, especially with spawners. If they've spawned out and you're starting to see almost mold on their sides, I would leave those guys there because they're just probably not going to taste very good, but the others should be just fine. It's nice and cool, and so it should help keep your body temperature down. And, I mean, the leaves and all the colors up there, let alone the spawning colors of the brook trout. And, yeah, it's just a beautiful time of year to be up in those elevations. Rainbows are a lot of fun to catch. Even the smaller ones seem to want to fight a lot harder than the same size cousins will. So rainbows are always fun, and those bigger ones again are coming up. So yeah, it can really be rewarding that way.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Put on your helmet. Let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends on Skype. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Of adventure invoked from the past. past. He's hunting and fishing in marshes and mountains, discovering life in the backcountry wild, exploring the West with its treasures abounding, with the soul of a sportsman and heart of a child. Wild and free, the song of the mountains is calling to me. Wild and free, in the great western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.